Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Writer's Process Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with
Colleen Tidd. Hey, everyone.
and she is my co-host for the show, and she's going to be, I guess we're going to be doing this together for our own show. This is going to be interesting. And there's been a while since I've done something like this before. So,
I'm excited. It's going to be a good one. Yeah.
So we're going to mainly talk about writing, obviously. So first of all, Colleen, you tell us a little bit about how did you get into writing, like a little bit of your background and stuff, and I'll
Yeah.
go into mine too, right after, but you go first.
That sounds good. Thanks, Jonathan. I basically started off with writing murder mystery scripts for theater murder mystery parties. I've done that for the past 8 years now.
What got you into that?
I honestly moved back to Waynesboro, Pennsylvania from Arkansas. I'd lived in Arkansas for 6 years. And when I moved back, I had my old friends that I left home from, all my high school friends that were all grown up and married with kids. And then I had a new set of friends that all of my neighbors that I just, fell in love with instantly. And I've always been big into Halloween. That's my holiday, my jam. So the first Halloween back, I wanted to invite both groups. And I am really, really horrible with awkward silence and not knowing each other and awkward conversation at get-togethers. If I feel like there needs to be something, a game played or something that just brings everyone together, because two different clicks, and I hate when there's a bunch of different clicks. So
Right.
I came up with the idea to write a murder mystery party for that specific gathering, and it was a huge success. Everybody loved it. They all got really into character and all came out of it being friends because we played different characters the entire night. And from there, it became an annual thing, and news kind of spread. Friends told other friends that told other people. And I started having nonprofits reach out to me, asking me to write them for fundraisers for them.
Nice.
Didn't even really have to advertise for it. It was just hearsay. So did that for 8 years, and still going strong with those. But about 3 years ago, no, going on 4 now, I met Barry Ratcliffe, and him and I hit it off the bat right away. He lives in this area as well. We became best friends instantly, and he suggested I try writing an actual script, a screenplay. And I wrote the first one and fell in love with writing screenplays, and have just been going with that ever since.
That's great. How did you meet Barry?
I volunteered for a place in Waynesboro. It's called Main Street Waynesboro, and I did a lot of event coordinating for them. We did a Wizarding Fest and farmers markets and all kinds of stuff. I was highly involved with them for a while, and through them, I became close with somebody else who had worked with Barry, and ran into him with her. And yeah, him and I just were best friends. I'll never forget. I walked into a little diner in our town called the Waynesburger, and I walked over to him, and my friend was with me, and she knew Barry. So she's like, "Oh, Barry, hey, how have you been?" And Barry and I look at each other, never met before, don't know who we are. He instantly picks me up in a bear hug and says, "I've missed you so much. How have you been?" And I fell right into the gameplay and said, "Hey, I missed you too. Oh my God, you're my best friend." And from there, it was instant.
But you didn't even know him?
No, we didn't even know each other at all. But it was just this instant best buds. Like, I'm gonna pick
Wow.
you up and swing you around in my arms and
Wow, that's funny. That's a
That's
kind of a bold move too, because you don't really know
extremely.
how the person's gonna react. Like, I mean, you could have had like the exact opposite reaction at that particular moment. I could have seen like it just getting really
Oh my God, who the
weird.
heck are you? You're creepy.
I
No, but
know.
that's Barry. He's bold. He's bold. And I think that's one of the things I loved about him. I like very loud, daring people, and Barry fits that to a T.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Jeez. But that's awesome. So that's how you got into writing. You wrote your first screenplay with him. And we are looking for somebody to buy that script from us, you
Yes.
know. So
Anyone
hopefully.
that wants a thriller, a good women empowerment thriller right there, psychological.
Psychological thriller. I mean, really, And that's such a specific niche market too. It's so so hard sometimes to find people who want to do it, but the people who want to do it are the ones who are really like looking out for it, you know?
Right. So, you're exactly.
It'll be found to the right hands at some
point. It will. And it's been nice because in the meantime, I've gotten to write commercials for Al Snow.
Nice, Al.
And other scripts that I've been hired on to write for other people, their ideas, but my writing. And there's definitely been a lot of opportunities that have stemmed because of meeting Barry and him introducing me to the script writing world of things. So
well, that's great. It's lovely when you're able to work with people that you enjoy working with.
Absolutely.
Which brings us to we are now working together on a bunch of stuff.
But there's so many projects and you know, talking to you so many times and having our writer's room discussions. Jonathan, you're a lot like I am with your style of writing. So what made you go that route? Like what's your backstory?
Well, I mean, like when I was a kid, I always wanted to be an actor, right? Like, because you don't really know, you know, I just wanted to be the guy on the screen, you know, doing all the cool stuff. You know, I wanted to be a Ghostbuster. I wanted to be, you know, in Princess Bride. You know what I mean? I wanted to be in all those movies that I grew up watching. The Karate Kid, I actually went learn karate so I could become like a Karate Kid because I just really enjoyed the magic of movie making. And then I think I was like 13 or 14. I think I was 13. I started writing as a kid, just writing like what I thought was like scripts were like really just like plays, you know, like I didn't know structure. I didn't know how to write. You know, I didn't actually ever see a real script till I was in high school and stuff. And, you know, so I had no idea. And that I think I might've found on the computer, or I know maybe there's tons of books that actually have the scripts and how to do it and everything. So I learned when I turned like about 19, I think is when I started doing my own like short films and writing and doing whatever. And I wrote my first short film. It's horrible. It's terrible, but I did this thing, you know, I made it with my friends, you know, and it was my first like real attempt. What usually people do when they're like 12 or even younger, you know, like Steven Spielberg was like 7 or 6 when he was making movies with his friends, you know. I should have been doing that then, and I wasn't. You know, I just didn't know like that was necessarily the path that I wanted to go on, because when I was in middle school, I was writing a little bit, but I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't thinking that anything would come from it. I just liked writing, you know? And so when I came out of high school, I started to like dive into it and everything for real. And about 19, 20-ish area, I started to just kind of dive right into doing stuff. And then I continued to go with it. And I mean, I think my first script which one was it? Was it Cruise of the Dead? No, my first script was Amusement, which was a vampire. There was Lost Boys in a theme park, like in Busch Gardens, you know. Because I used to work there.
I love Lost Boys. That's awesome already.
Yeah, it wasn't like a ripoff of Lost Boys, but it sort of was. I mean, it's basically about these kids and that worked at a theme park who, you know, who basically, you know, learned how to fight vampires, you know, because the vampires would come at night when the theme park was closed. They would come and they would attack all the people or whatever and stuff. So they got into, you know, it was just this really, I don't know, it was my first exercise into writing something. And I wrote the script and I've told this story to people before, but, and I might've told you like personally, I don't know, but I had this guy, I asked this guy to read my script, right? And give me notes, you know, and I, you know,
yeah, that makes sense.
Constructive criticism, right? And he was a writer. I know he had done like short films, and I know he had done like a book, you know, or whatever. So I was like, you know, maybe he'll read it, whatever. And I got the notes back. There were notes. There were like 10 notes on every page. I mean, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but
so discouraging, though. It's, but I mean, it's good criticism, you know. It's things.
Well,
you need to learn,
but no, it's definitely discouraging. So it was like 10 notes on every page up to page 30, and then at the end of page 30, he said, "I can't read anymore." Something like, "I can't read anymore. This is too terrible of a script. I hope you never write again." You know?
Oh, Jonathan, are you serious?
Yeah, no, that was it. And I was like, it was very discouraging, you know, and it was very sad. And like, and I was almost pissed, you know, because like, I told the guy, look, the best stuff comes later. And he was like, well, that's where you should have started, because all I saw was crap, you know. And I was like harsh. So so I thought it was, you know, kind of sad, but I you know, it probably stopped me for like a few days, you know, like, because when you get hit with stuff like that, or you know, whatever you're dealing with, because I mean, I had instances like I've wanted to quit, but I never wanted to quit writing, because I always just, like, no matter what, I always enjoyed it. Like, even if the outcome wasn't the greatest, like, I enjoyed the process of writing. So, and it was my first like feature length script. Like, this was something that I was proud that I actually finished, because at that point I hadn't even finished a script before. I'd started so many and I never finished. And so for me to go, oh my God, this is finished. It's in my hands. It's done.
That's an accomplishment in itself. It really is to write a full featured script.
So, yeah. So I was just happy that I got it finished. But, you know, when he said that, I was almost in like a little like 3 or 4 day hole, you know, of like wallow and pity. And, you know, I think I was drinking back then. So that probably hyped it up a little bit. I don't know. And I was really upset. And then I don't know what snapped or whatever, or, you know, just maybe people told me, you know, fuck that guy, you know, what does he know, blah 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 blah, that kind of thing. Because, like, you know, and a lot of people don't think about it, but when the writer writes, he's kind of putting his like passion, he's putting his heart into it. And if it doesn't even seem like it, like, you look at some of these movies, and some of the movies are terrible, but at least the writers were putting something, you know,
see the passion in it.
Exactly. And so I was just like, okay, this is kind of sad, but I think I just kept going. And so I kept writing. And then, so there's one day I wrote a script, like the whole day. Like, I wrote a feature script in one day. Wow. I don't even know how I did it. It was like 80 pages long. It was probably terrible. I don't know.
It's incredible.
Well, I mean, it was, I think I had this like feeling like I wanted to do that, you know, like I wanted it as an exercise. Like, can I actually write a full feature length script? And, you know, so I just started pounding it out, and then it was done, and it was out, and nothing. I think I put it up for WGA or whatever at the time, and I never did anything with it. You know,
but the point is, you just keep on writing, because work is going to get criticized. There's people that are going to hate it, and there's people that are going to love it, and it's not up to one person to decide whether or not you're a good enough writer.
And I think, I'm not sure what the quote exactly is, but like, Robert Rodriguez always kind of says that you've got like 80 to 100 bad movies in you. So the quicker you get them out, the better, you know, the better you'll become.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So he was like, that's why he pounded out like 80 to 100 shorts, you know, or whatever. He's like, get them out as quickly as possible.
Get them all out of the way now.
Yeah. And then
start making good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then he did make a good short. It's called Bedhead. And then that inspired him to to actually get El Mariachi done. And and then the rest was history for Robert Rodriguez. And Robert, I think, is a fantastic director. And I think he's a great writer when he, you know, when he has like a specific vision. Like El Mariachi was freaking wonderful. Desperado was unbelievable.
Desperado, yes.
Once Upon a Time in Mexico is just silly.
You know, I haven't seen that one actually.
Really? But, yeah, it's just fun. It's not it's the part of a trilogy of the of his El Mariachi trilogy, but real quick, before you say your question, who inspires you as a writer? Like, who are the people? Because you don't have to have just one.
Right, that is actually something that is really difficult for me to answer, because I'm so used to the world of books and novels and short stories. And this world is so new to me. I mean, growing up, of course, I loved everything about Hollywood and films and all of that, but it was more of what you saw on camera, not what you saw behind the camera.
Right.
So that's still so brand new to me. And so, you know, if you were to ask me that question a year ago, my answer would have been like Stephen King. Like, you know, that's my style. He's not a screenwriter, obviously, but that type of story.
I think he has written screenplays.
I've always wondered that. I know, like, obviously a lot of his books have turned into films, but I never knew if he wrote.
I think he actually wrote the script to Creepshow, maybe one or two or whatever.
Love that show. Okay, see, this is so exciting.
Yeah, because you're like, oh my god. Right. He did, because I know he acted in it.
Right, I do remember that.
Yeah, he had the really funny, goofy character. Mm-hmm.
I will say, as far as
original screenplay by
what was Stephen King.
Yep, he wrote
That's an okay answer to give then. Sweet.
Yeah, there you go.
He's honestly a
wonderful like writer, period.
He is. And I've always been a fan of the non-happy endings at the end of every single one of his books. It's never a happy ending. And I love that. Love that. But Jeffrey Reddick, I know we just had him on the show. Phenomenal. Before I knew anything about who wrote Final Destination, that series was just one of those series that stuck with me because of the writing. Mm-hmm. And the writer of Scream, which I hate to say it, I don't know the name.
Kevin Williamson.
Thank you.
Well, and that's phenomenal. And a lot of people wouldn't probably know his name, mm-hmm. except I'm like, you know, I've ever since Scream, you know, mm-hmm. and then I saw Dawson's Creek, and then I saw Vampire Diaries, and I've seen shit from him that like not many people have, you know, because it came out and it came and went. Like he did a show called Glory Days, which really was great, because originally he wanted to be from what I heard, he wanted to be a drama, you know, and it was supposed to be just a drama about a writer who comes back home after, you know, writing a tell-all book, you know, about mm-hmm. his town and everything, and people, and the people upset about like him exploiting all their like secrets and their dark, you know, whatever. And then somebody was like, yeah, it's kind of sort of been done before, you know, you gotta like spruce it up a little bit. And he decided to make it a supernatural kind of thing, like a, you know, where he's kind of like solving all these cases because he's a mystery writer. Cool. And
that's
everything.
Awesome.
Yeah, you probably like it. I'm sad like it might be on YouTube, but it's like I don't think it got a DVD release.
I adored the best ones to find. Yeah
right, if you can find it, awesome, because I think it should. I think all the episodes that ever like got made should be put mm-hmm. out on something. I think for every show that's ever existed, they should be available somewhere, because like, there's always, I mean, why spend all that money and mm-hmm. then it doesn't make any to just like just let it go to rot, you know, somewhere. Yep. You know what I mean? I mean, we've got all this like technology to stream all of this shit. Like, right. Put everything out that you can, like that you have the rights to. Put it out.
Exactly. Yes. What's that show? It was just a few months ago. I was thinking the same thing because I came across the show. I remembered this show called Joan of Arcadia. I was obsessed with it when it came out. Yeah, love that show. I looked on all the streaming services. Then I'm like, okay, I'll go on the Amazon and just buy the DVDs. Well, it's not available. I had to, I found them on eBay eventually. Somebody was selling the two seasons. But why isn't that made available in some form
and,
or
you
another?
Know, and it's probably a bootleg because I believe like you could buy Glory Days on... you know, on bootleg or whatever, and they're mm-hmm. like DVD minus R or whatever, you know, like kind of like, you know, people copied it off of their television and then put it on like a disc quality. Or whatever, poor quality, but it doesn't matter because you get to watch the show. So kind of, you know, I mean, I used to copy stuff or whatever. I mean, you know, and everything and put it on a disc and watch it. Probably mm-hmm. still have a few things or whatever mm-hmm. that I used to watch as like that isn't available, you know, and that kind of sucks. Or a show will be like, they'll put it on DVD for like one season and then never put it the rest of this series on. I'm like, why not do
all the point of that
complete series, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very frustrating.
Whatever.
But no, getting back to the influence though, I think anyone, even though I'm still learning these creative, brilliant minds behind the movies and who wrote these scripts, I think anytime a writer is able to write something that makes you think and has a twist of some sort, I mean, I'm automatically going to love that right. writing style. So yeah. How about you?
What's the question?
Your inspiration.
Oh, what are my inspirations? Well, you've already mentioned Kevin Weinsman, which mm-hmm. I am. You know, I got Scream really got me back into horror. So So I adored him for that. For film, a lot of my inspiration was like Kevin Smith, which a lot of people don't like. I mean, like Kevin Smith's hit or miss. Like he has a core audience that love him, or mm-hmm. there are people that just don't dig what he does, and that's fine. I mean, that's
I'm one of his support. I love him. I'm with you. He's phenomenal.
Well, he's also one of the few that's actually like Hollywood who actually will meet his fans, you know, and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And everything. Like I've met him twice and I mean, obviously you won't remember me either time, but you know, I just adore his work and everything that he's done. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Quentin Tarantino, I feel like a lot of people say his, you know, say him or whatever, and it's funny because
that's the go-to.
He's been like, he's inspired others, but he's also mm-hmm. been inspired by, you know, to make his own stuff or whatever. But
that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So mm-hmm. it's interesting, but mm-hmm. I really dig him as a writer just because, like, I think with him, Kevin Smith, Rob Rodriguez, all those guys were kind of like Sundance guys who were like these indie filmmakers who went off and
they didn't start off in Hollywood. They worked their way up. I agree.
And Robert and Quentin were really big with each other because they started in Sundance at the same time, I think like 91. So they kind of got their start and then all of a sudden they became like friends and mm-hmm. workers and stuff. And Eli Roth is another inspiration, which once again, very hit or miss. A lot of people don't like his work and everything whatnot. But I mean, Cabin Fever and Hostel and I just adore everything he's
Cabin
ever done.
Cabin Fever, oh my gosh. I would have to agree with you on that one. Cabin Fever though, that leg shaving scene, that still gets to me to this day.
So, like I said, I used to work at a theme park and mm-hmm. one of my supervisors, I was really close friends with, still to this day, I'm friends with her. She told me, wait a minute, which one was it? Because no. Yeah, she was the one who came. She came up to me and said that she had watched Cabin Fever and they left the movie theater because of the grossness of how, because they weren't expecting it to be that messed up a movie, I guess, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she hated it. And I was like, that like, I hadn't seen it yet. Right. So that mm-hmm. made me like more like excited to watch it. Like if mm-hmm. it grossed somebody else out, I'm like, oh, I got to see it. Like it's get, well, it grossed me out too. And no, it didn't. Mm-hmm. It, and then, one of my friends and I went to see a Hostel when that came out in the theater. And
that's a rough one. It's rough.
And I was surprised my friend actually went because he doesn't like this kind of stuff. But he liked Cabin Fever better because I guess because it was funnier, you know, it had like funnier moments.
It did, yeah, I can see that.
Hostel it was a little was lighter, I guess. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. but a Hostel had some, I mean, some funny moments too. Mm-hmm. If you're dark, if you have a dark sense of humor, right. Like me. So I liked, I liked it. And then, so I kind of followed his career and I've got almost all his films on Blu-ray. I just need, I think I need the one he produced called Aftershock or Aftershocks, something like that. But it was one he produced. It's amazing. I don't know if you've seen it or not yet. It's freaking, I think it's set in like Colombia or somewhere in like maybe mm-hmm. South America, but it's basically about a, it's Chile, I think Chile. Mm-hmm. And they're down in Chile, like, you know, doing like a spring break type thing and some friends are out there or whatever. And then, they're all of a sudden there's like a, earthquake that hits. And it's horrible. Like people start dying from it, you know, it's like one of the worst earthquakes. And then everything seems whatever, everybody's fine. Then of course, what comes after the earthquakes? The aftershocks.
Bam, right.
They're just as bad, if
which
not
can be
worse
than the art. Yep. Exactly.
And yep. So it was brutal. So it was kind of like a disaster movie. Mm-hmm. But also kind of like a slasher in a way. And it's the idea of like, okay, this could be the end of everybody's life. So people are literally doing everything they can to survive, you know,
which including involves like, killing and looting and
exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy movie. It's really good.
See, that's too real for me. That scares me. That's the kind of stuff that actually does get to me as far as
especially nowadays, like with all the shit that's already been going on, like a story like that, I mean, a lot of people, some people will love it and some people will be like, nope, that I can't be real.
Exactly. It's that's too close to home nowadays. So.
Yeah, I think he co-wrote and produced it and acted in it. Eli Roth's actually a pretty damn good actor. I feel like he doesn't get enough credit. He was like in Inglorious Bastards playing the bear Jew and everything.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. That movie's fantastic too, by the way. But yeah. I didn't realize that was him in there. Okay.
Well, him and Tarantino are really good friends. And
nice.
Yeah, they used to work, you know. I know way mm-hmm. too much about those guys.
I love it though. That's awesome.
I mean, like, I feel like it sounds like I do research, but I just like, I don't know. I just love reading about these things, you know?
Right. And that is one thing I'm finding with all of this and entering in the actual world of filming and writing screenplays is that all of the things I was in awe of as a child or that I've showed interest in are making sense now. And it all comes together and it's you absorb everything that you take in. So it's like every little piece of the movie now, it's like, oh, this person did this. This person wrote it, directed it, produced it. This person did the camera work behind it or edited it. You know, it's so much that you want to absorb it all and take it in. So that makes sense. Then.
It's sort of funny because Tarantino mentioned in an interview once that when he was a kid, he only knew about acting just like I did, right? Like mm-hmm. when he was a kid, all you wanted to do was be an actor because that's right. who you know when you're a kid, right? When you exactly. get older, you start learning like who the writer is, who the director is, who the producers are and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you become into that, you know? And see, I wasn't into film like he was, you know? Mm-hmm. He's a film connoisseur. Like, you know, right. Like he studied these things, and now he's rich enough to have like screening rooms and is, you know, with a theater, with a real like projection, you know, and stuff, and be right. able to show all his friends like a, you know, like a real movie theater, you know, in his house, you know.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Right. And, you know, from what I keep hearing from other like people who actually know him or come to his house or whatever, he'll have actual, you know, he'll have parties or whatever, he'll invite people over to come watch movies with him, and they'll screen it, make popcorn, mm-hmm. and then, you know, like sometimes he'll have a little ticket, you know, and shit, and he would treat it like a movie going experience. And that's why he's like so mad about digital, is because, you know, it's taking away that, you know, that love that he had for that, right. But like, I mean, I hate to say, times are changing, it sucks mm-hmm. for people who are cinephiles, and Christopher Nolan is big on the theater and everything, and mm-hmm. you know, his movies are made to be in the theater, you know, his films are right. like larger than life, just like Tarantino wants to, though exactly. I will just
there's a reason for that, right?
Right. And Tarantino is those one of those guys who knows all that stuff. When I was a kid, I might have known who wrote and directed and produced, maybe, because I was always fascinated by credits when I saw them pop up, you know. Yeah. I would want to know like who did that stuff, so that I could watch more of their movies. That was really right. what it was like. If I looked at Ghostbusters, I'm like, oh, Ivan Reitman directed that movie. I'm like, who's Ivan Reitman? What else has he done? Oh, he did right. Stripes. He did, did he do Meatballs? He did, you know, he's done all this stuff, mm-hmm. all these movies. And then later on, he hasn't really done that many great things. And then I dive into other stuff. Like I start learning more about other writers. And mm-hmm. one of my other favorite inspirations I forgot to mention was The Princess Bride's writer, William Goldman, who's got some amazing books. If you haven't ever picked these up, here's one of them. It's called Which Lie Did I Tell? Okay. It's more Adventures in the Screen Trade. There's another movie called, or book called Adventures in the Screen Trade. And basically, William Goldman writes these essays about all the movies he's written, you know, mm-hmm. all the way up to his last movie that he did, Dreamcatcher, I think, if I'm right. Maybe not. What was the last one he did on this one? Because this was, yeah, he did all the way up to, because he, it's an amazing book, by the way, all of these. And they're, I don't know. There's a million stories about, and then he also has like scripts that he puts, actually the full length scripts in here wow. for you guys, to, for everybody to see what it was, you know, like, and, yeah, so
how cool is that? And that's the Which Lie Did I Tell one.
Yeah, that's the Which Lie Did I Tell, which Damn. Adventures in the Screen Trade is the same okay. story thing. He also wrote Butch and Sundance, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. He mm-hmm. You know, he does like a lot of this stuff. He's just an amazing writer, and it's weird to think like the same writer of The Princess Bride wrote mm-hmm. Misery, you know.
Right, right. Two very different.
Yeah, well, I mean,
completely different. Yeah.
He's so versatile. Like he did that. He also did, you know, what's the other ones? He wrote Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I have not seen that in years, but it is not the movie it was supposed to be, you know, originally. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be like a fun, like romp of a you know, supposed to be like Ghostbusters, you know, Invisible Man, like Ghostbusters, kind of special okay. effects one. But uh-huh. anyway,
uh-huh. huh?
So, yeah. So there's there's a lot. Yeah, can talk about inspirations for a while now, but
there's so many out there. I mean, you know, but you know, you're showing me the books and talking about how you were writing since you were little and then had to learn how to format and all of that. And it sounds very similar to what I went through as well, because when I was younger, I would write poems and songs and short stories and all that fun stuff. And I've quickly realized, and actually Barry told me this shortly after showing an interest in the film industry. And he said, you know, you can be the most brilliant creative person, have the most incredible ideas, but if you don't know how to do it, if you don't practice, if you don't research, if you don't learn, it'll get you nowhere. Like a brilliant, you know, the most creative minds, just because you can write an incredible story doesn't mean you can write a script or you can write, you know. And that's, I remember before writing the first script, my husband and I would sit down and just find script after script after script online that we could read, just so I could get formatting down and researching what's the best way to do this.
which scripts did you find?
Oh gosh, that's so long ago. Which one? I have to think about that for a second. There, I know it was some action script that Kevin liked, my husband liked way more than I did, just because he's way more into action than I am. But just reading it and seeing the format of it and the dialogue between the characters was so much to take in for me and so much to learn and see, okay, this is how a good script is written.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Action's fun to read because, like, I mean, it takes a lot to do an action scene, you know, or to write an action scene. You can't just say, this guy kicked another guy. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There has to be, it's like, be very specific.
Sweat drops down. The bead of sweat drops down as he sidekicks. I don't know. I don't write action.
Right, as he sidekicks. And then, right, you know, the other guy blocks, you know, and whatever. But, it, like, you have to write it specifically to what's going to happen. And
right,
and so when I see these like action movies, like especially like the Marvel comics and stuff, I'm like, I'm always like interested in maybe reading the scripts, because I just want to know, how do they write, like, this big beam of light falls down from the heavens and like, you know, scorches whatever, you know what I mean, like, how does that translate in the script to what eventually became the movies, you know, and everything. So I'm always excited about that. But action is
Nightcrawler. Sorry, it was Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler. That was a great one.
That was the one. Yes.
That was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Like, yes. Wow. Yep.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
Barry was actually in, no, that was not the one he was in. He was in some movie with Jake Gyllenhaal where he actually played Jake's double, which is hilarious. I mean, he likes to joke about that all the time.
Is he the same height?
Yeah, roughly, maybe, possibly. Huge age, I mean, age differences was definitely a factor, but he was in the background on the bridge and pretending to be Jake, or he was his double, and some bridge, and it was some kissing scene. It wasn't Nightcrawler. I can't remember which one it was. Zodiac, that one.
Nice.
Yes, yeah. But
I like Zodiac. That was a good one.
That is a good one. Yeah.
I haven't talked about this much, I don't think. But because it's sort of, it really depressed me. But there's a movie being filmed in Richmond, Virginia, a few years ago. And my agent at the time, who I think, I mean, technically still my agent, because I didn't ever get rid of her and she never fired me, so technically still my agent, but we just haven't done it. I haven't used her in forever and we haven't talked. Mm-hmm. But so she sent out like emails about this the shoot that was happening, if you are interested in being a background extra in a movie called Imperium, which was which had Daniel Radcliffe in it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was like, sweet. And their big thing was that they would have to shave your head as a neo-Nazi or whatnot, and you know, would you be able to do that kind of thing, was they were asking a lot of people that. And I was like, sure, you know, for a few hundred, bucks or whatever it was, right, to be like a background, you know, I'm okay.
The credit alone. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. It was like, you know, experience. I didn't care. So I sent in to be a extra, like whatever background. And mm-hmm. I sent him my resume, my headshot, and my whatever. And I don't know if I sent my reel in or not, but sent that stuff in. And the people came back saying, because I had written as 5'4", like my height. And I'm really, I think, 5'3". But they saw that I was like basically close enough to Daniel Radcliffe's height, which is 5'5".
Right, yeah.
And so they said, would you want to be his stand-in? And I was like, sure, you know, like, I'd love to. So they're like, we gotta check, but we're pretty sure you'll, you know, whatever, we'll get back to you. They never got back to me. Never. And I found out from my agent that they found somebody else. I'm thinking it was like, my family thinks it was a, Daniel's like personal stand-in that they probably flown out to, you know,
at
which,
that point in his career, yeah, right. I'm sure he had that.
Yeah,
available.
And you know, right. So, and plus, that would make more sense to, you know, fly somebody out that's worked with them, that's exactly his height, that he feels comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't mad about like not being his stand-in, because that's not what I went for. What I got mad about was I sent him a message saying, hey, you know, is everything going okay with that? If not, do you guys still need me as an extra? I'm very okay with shaving my head and being an extra.
Right.
So they never got back to me with that. And I was just like, I lost a role as an extra over not being the stand-in. Like, it didn't,
right, that doesn't sit well. No,
yeah, it was like weird to me. So I don't know, it was a strange Hollywood sort of, and it wasn't even Hollywood, this is indie film set, right. So I mean it was just strange that I like got looked over on that. Maybe the guy just got a million, you know, messages and just couldn't respond or something. I don't know,
it's possible. But yeah, when they're already looking at you as the stand-in.
And then they go, and they were like, they were saying I had an impressive resume and stuff, and surprised I wanted to be an extra. And I'm like, I was like, that's quite a compliment, but like, like it seems like a nice compliment to give somebody, but like, if I mean, if they're still willing to do like that, you know, do it, you know,
exactly.
I don't really like, I wasn't a, you know, I'm not at all above being an extra in something. I've been extra in a couple Lifetime movies just recently, and I'm okay with that, because it's work, and it's a chance to be on set. Like, to me, that's the best thing, is being on set. Like, whether I'm being an extra in something, whether I'm being a writer of something, whether I'm directing it doesn't, acting in it as a like star, it doesn't matter. Like, I just want to be on set. And so it was kind of a very disappointing sort of thing, you know.
I know I'm happens. With you though, anything to be on set is incredible, and it's an opportunity in itself. So I'm with you. I'd go for those extra roles any day.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, out here in little Waynesboro, PA, there's not much of that available.
You never know. You should look into, like, I bet they have a film commission there somewhere in Pennsylvania. So just look up. I mean, how close are you to like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia?
About 3 hours in both directions. We're kind of right in the middle of the triangle there. So there you go.
So like, you know, 3 hours isn't that long of a drive to go do what you love, you know.
That's a very good point. Yeah. You've got to speak it out there, I guess.
Yeah. Look out there, because I mean, if you can't find it in your town, it's there. It's close by. It's just not necessarily there. Right. And that's,
I don't have to go all the way out to California every time, is what you're telling me.
Hell, right now you can't go to California.
I know. Ugh, it's killing me. It is.
I know. And it's killing me too, because I mean, I want work. I got really mad the other day because a friend of mine posted that she had like SAG, like she was looking for background for a SAG project, right? Mm-hmm. And she was looking for SAG actors only. And I was like, damn, well, not SAG. And then she did reply saying, you know, I'll see if they can, like, basically if they can see if they can make an exception for me because we're friends. So, you know,
yeah,
we'll see. It's cool not, and like, I would just rather like work right now, you know, like that's the thing. I don't care what I'm doing, you know, or whatnot, as long as I'm working.
Either working or working towards something. Either one of those is
Working or writing, which is working to me.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
All of it is work. I mean, if we're the only profession basically that including acting and any of that in the entertainment industry where you can watch TV and technically you're doing research.
That's true.
If you're watching this movie, you know, or whatever, say you're watching a movie that you just are not interested in whatsoever, but you're watching it for a creative thought, you know, or whatever.
Exactly. Like, yes. Yeah, I agree. And I do, I'm sure you do as well. We have those inspirational shows that we just put on in the background sometimes. And it's just, even if you're not fully paying attention to them,
Well, the problem is I can't ever do that. I can't do that. I will, like, the problem with it is I will want to like watch, you know. So like I was like thinking of Law and Order Special Victims Unit as like my go-to thing, but like literally if I had it while I'm writing and it was on in the background, I would want to I would want to stop what I'm doing and watch because, well, unless it's this post Stabler ones, then I could probably keep it in the background. I don't care, but you know, I think he's coming back on his own show. So that's going to be fun. Yeah.
That is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. He is definitely like an inspiration to my writing and my, and my, because like I've always been fascinated by his character. His character has like so many of these crazy arcs that I mean throughout he did like 11 seasons or something, so like his arc went up down all around, like it changed so much, and his character just kind of had more depth than and I hate to say it, even more than Mariska Hargitay's even had. Like I felt like her character kind of, she stays the same in a way, like
she does. There's not much growth from her.
I mean, even when she had the kid, it didn't seem like much changed, you know, and everything. And that was kind of disappointing when she became the captain. I'm like, oh, so things are gonna get, you know, a little different, and it just felt the same. So I was like, kind of disappointed by it, but I think the Stabler always changed, like they. Maybe that's why he left, because he just felt like you just kept going, bouncing different things. I'm excited to see, like, you know, it's been over 10 years, I think, maybe that he's been off the show. So I'm like wondering what is Stabler up to? Like, I want to know, like,
yes, what would he be doing right now? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I didn't even really like, I liked Criminal Intent a little bit because I liked Vincent D'Onofrio's stuff.
I never really got into that one as much.
I really like him. I don't like Jeff Goldblum. I like Jeff Goldblum.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I like him. He's wonderful in a lot of things. Just didn't find him like all that appealing on Criminal Intent. I just felt like he was just this big name actor who was playing you know what I mean, like,
right, he does amazing work, but he doesn't need to be in that, like, doing exactly, that, like, right there.
I think what's great about those shows is generally they find actors who may not have, like, Chris Maloney, who plays Stabler, he wasn't a big time actor at that point. He wasn't Mariska Hargitay was not a big time actor at that point. She was sort of famous for her mother and stuff, but like she wasn't famous on herself yet. And they made them famous, you know. Vincent D'Onofrio had already been in it.
They worked their way up from that show. And that's what made them who they are. Right.
Right. And now they're famous because of that show. and I think Vincent D'Onofrio and all of them, I think they tried with this kind of show that had all these actors who are already sort of, you know, like noticeable from other movies and TV shows and stuff. And, you know, they kind of, it kind of lost it, I think, for that. That's why it didn't last as long, you know, nearly as long as Special Victims Unit. So.
But, SVU's always been the best, in my opinion. That's, yep, I'm with
SVU,
you.
SVU, yeah.
Yep.
And I didn't even like the first Law and Order. I remember having to watch it for, like, Law and Society class that I had. And I was so bored by it. Like, I was like, I mean, I don't know. I like, and then of course I think it's because the characters, the detectives or whatever, aren't as interesting as like Stabler. Right. Stabler has this like crazy.
Right. And that's something, the character needs a story. They need a background. They need their own personality.
Exactly.
There are some shows and movies that don't always do that for their characters, and then it does, it becomes boring and bland. So
so if you can make a detective show that's interesting and goes above and beyond what you normally see in detective shows, then I feel like you know, you got something. But I feel like a lot of shows, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I think was it Criminal Intent, I think was on for like 10 seasons, so I mean they were doing something right, you know.
They were no, that's true. I but, just not one that I ever got into.
Yeah,
you know, one of my favorites is, and I don't even know if it falls in the category of detective shows, but I'm putting it in that category. Psych. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I never got into it. I watched it a few times. I mean, it's not like I never wanted to watch it, but I just never, it was never my thing, you know. I like Monk, you know, which is a sort of a detective
Monk
show.
Monk is one that I haven't seen either, but is that the one where the guy's like OCD? I've been wanting to watch that.
Oh, you gotta watch it. If you like Psych, you'll probably love Monk. It's sort of a, it's a little the same, like quirky. You know, at that time they were quirky, kind of weird thing, but it's definitely quirky. I like it. I don't know every episode of it or anything. My mother was like a mystery person. So, you know, she still watches these like crazy murder mystery stuff. Like she likes this show called Midsummer Murders. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I haven't.
It's like a UK show, I think. So, but, or maybe it's Irish or something. I don't know. Something in the, you know, UK area. But it's freaking, you know, it's pretty good. It's a detective show that, you know, pretty much just, I mean, like any other detective show, they're just investigating these murders that are happening. Right. Or she would watch like Murder, She Wrote, or
that's a good one. I grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries, and then they came back with they rebooted it this year, and I watched that whole thing.
There's more Unsolved Mysteries to like look at, right? You know.
Yep. Exactly. So anything that was on the ID channel too, like
that's another thing my mom would always watch. And it's funny because I've been on two shows that go on the ID channel.
I remember you saying that. So you played oh my goodness. I remember this story, but you played like two different parts in one episode.
Yes.
One time?
I played two times. I mean, both roles were Johns, you know, picking up hookers.
Right.
One was a S&M John, and that was not even like what I signed up for. I had signed up to be the other John.
That's right.
And then they asked, do you mind coming in here and doing this with us? And I was like, sure. I didn't get paid extra money. Which was kind of mad about, like, I should have said something to them, like, am I going to get paid like an extra, you know, whatever, like $50 or something. But no, I didn't negotiate with them because I was just happy to be, this is my first time working with them. You know, I didn't want to like say anything. So I kind of like, I had to whip my leg with a whip, you know, and everything. And that was it. And the director just kept saying harder. Whip harder.
Okay.
And it hurt after a little bit.
Paid
I was
way
like,
more.
Damn. And then I came back, and then I had to play a John that bought a hooker with a credit card.
That's a fun role to play. A male hooker. There we go.
A gigolo. That would have been fun.
Yeah, there we go.
No, I didn't play that. Not yet.
Maybe
my next ID. Well, that's the fun thing about ID TV is they don't just do it in like Virginia. They don't just do it in California. They do it all over the place.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
They have like other, like just like kind of, I think Lifetime does this too, where they just kind of farm out to different production companies and they just kind of, they kind of make it. So, you know, the different shows or whatever. So it's kind of cool.
Cool how that works. Yeah.
Well, is there anything else like that you wanted to ask or to mention?
Well, okay, on previous shows I've asked the question and I think we should answer it this time around. Any type of quirky habits or routine type of habitual things you find yourself doing to put you in the moment when writing? Like, do you have to like have the lights turned on certain lights turned on?
I don't have anything like that. I mean, yeah. I don't have anything too specific, you know. Everything that I used to have a more routine of like getting up and writing or writing before going to bed. Now it's just like whenever I can write, you know, like whenever I'm not doing whatever, I'll write. Let's see what else. I started writing outside in coffee shops, you know, because it's nice out here. So I would go, I was living out in like Van Nuys before, and I would come out to Burbank and I would just sit outside at a cafe and just write. And it was cool because you'd see people walking by and maybe one of them could be famous for all you know, or maybe they'll look at you and go, who's that, you know, writer right there, what is he writing, you know? But you see like 10 people with the same laptop, my laptop, an Apple, you know, MacBook, and all writing, you know, at the same time and stuff. So either they're writing stories, like my friend Morgan, she goes out to the cafe and writes these, her novel, or, you know, they could be screenwriters. Most of them are probably screenwriters, like looking to get, you know, looking to get their script done or whatever, you know, at that particular time. So it's a neat little, like, I like it. Like when I discovered it last year, or wait, 2019, when I discovered it, that place, I was like, oh, this is really nice. Then I started going there all the time and it's become, I think the people know me by now. Well, I mean, not by name necessarily, but they know, like,
they recognize you, a
regular customer there. Yeah. Right. So I make sure to buy a coffee because I don't want to just take up a table with my, you know,
that makes sense. That's always good.
Right. You buy the coffee, you sit down at a table, you write. You know,
sip on that coffee for 4 hours.
Pretty much, or, you know, however long it takes to write the damn thing. Maybe you'll get two coffees if you feel like you're taking advantage of them. And I never was a coffee shop writer, you know. In Williamsburg, I tried it once and I hated it.
The weather's not, the atmosphere here is not the same.
It's not the same. You're not as creative feeling. Like, I feel like LA, have you been to LA before or?
Last year, I was there 3 times last year and then COVID hit. Well, I guess technically the year before, 2019.
So you know what I'm talking about when I say like, the feeling you get. Yeah, when you get there, you can just feel the creativity in the air, you know. And so when I'm out there,
and it's LA specifically, because I lived in Monterey for 2 years when I was 18, and that's a beautiful area. Like, love Monterey, but there's something about LA. You're right; it's that atmosphere of just being surrounded by it. Yeah, I miss it.
So many people are doing it, and they're feeling creative. And that energy is flowing, and you know, you can feel it. You know. I felt that the minute I got off or got out of the airport and was going into my, going into the Uber the first day I got there, I was like, this is my home. Like, I can feel it, you know? And so I felt like, cause I thought I was going to hate it and stuff. I didn't know. And I was like, oh man, this is going to suck if I've got everybody all hyped up that I'm going and then I hate it and I'm not happy, you know, I come back and I got, you know, don't really want to move. I don't like it. And there might've been some things that made me feel that way, but like literally all of it like outweighed any of the bad, like all the good that comes from it. So, so what about you?
I am a nighttime rider. And it's so funny because if I'm not riding on a normal night, I'm like in bed by 9:30 at the latest. I'm dead asleep to the world, dead to the world at that time. But when I get into my riding kicks, I like the peaceful silence of the night. And I can be up till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, still wide awake, working on a script. And I always have to have my coffee with as well, like something about a hot drink, whether it's coffee or tea.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
My two requirements, dark and...
You know, I'll start doing that. I'm going to start either coffee or tea. I'll start seeing how that, if that affects my writing at all. Changes
about
anything.
The warmth. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. But you were saying something about your first time in LA.
Oh, well, my first time visiting my friend Eliza, who unfortunately doesn't live in LA anymore, but my first time visiting her, she's a composer out there, and she works with Asylum Studios. But I was staying with her, and her and I really getting to know each other and going back and forth with what our dreams and goals were. And she looks at me and she goes, Colleen, you're the fish in LA is your ocean. Like, you're not going to have any issues making that transition if you decide to move here. It's like, your husband on the other hand.
Does he want to move?
We've talked about it so many times. He actually just recently got into cybersecurity. He finished getting certifications for that this past year and got a job close to home, obviously. So right now he's more so focusing on starting that career, transitioning in careers. But once we're in a place where he can start applying to LA,
like transfer. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's the goal. So it's either LA or I don't know. We've even talked about like Austin, Texas, Portland would be phenomenal. Anywhere that's where there's more creativity flowing, if you ask.
I was gonna say, so like somebody had said in a Facebook group that she had wanted to move to LA this year and with a bunch of like-minded individuals start their own studio, blah blah blah. And everybody was telling her, not this year, not this year. And I agreed. And I said, like, you know, I came out last year. I, you know, I've been here for a year now. And I came out there and I was thinking, you know, this is going to be great, blah, blah, blah. But then kind of COVID hit and things kind of took a little bit of a turn and shut down. And so this is just really not a good time. Honestly, to move to LA. A lot of people are actually moving away from California because the cost of living out here is ridiculous, you know.
I have a lot of close friends that are leaving that.
What?
Yeah, I have a lot of close friends that have, if they haven't already left California, they're talking about it, and it's just, it's a bummer. But I understand. I mean, I get it. The costs are insane.
But it was definitely worth it once things start going. I mean, I was even told by somebody that I shouldn't get an agent, try to find an agent until like sometime in the spring, you know, probably closer to summer, because right now things are all shut down and even the agencies are having a hard time doing anything. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, acting, I guess there's still films being made. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, that's true. There's stuff that can still be done, but if you're looking to get a fresh start out in LA right now, it's not the time.
Yeah.
But I agree.
You know, it's great because it gives us more time to write and to be creative and do these things, do these podcasts and everything. But once things start picking back up, a lot of things will have to be put on hold or, you know, or whatever, or organized to be later, you know, done later. So I mean, it's just
definitely
a matter of we'll see how things
rolling
develop.
With it and going with the going with the flow of things at this point. So.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been great. I enjoyed.
This is awesome.
Stick around after. I always like to say that to make sure people know. And everybody, tune in next month. We're going to try to get this out the first Friday of every month. So get ready for that. Mm-hmm. Was that the schedule last time, last month?
Was it the first Monday, or it might have been the first Monday, or was it Friday? Oh, I can't remember. Christmas and
I know everything's so crazy.
right.
Well, it's gonna be the first Friday for now.
First Friday. Yep. I think that's a good plan. Yeah.
So unless things change, but if not, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll see it. So we'll keep you guys updated on the Facebooks. Speaking of which, do you have anything to plug?
Facebook, you can find me on there, Colleen Tidd. Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. I do love my TikTok. I know everyone's going to laugh at me for that one. 33 years old and on TikTok, but follow me all Colleen Tidd. I'm easy.
There's no age limit for TikTok, you know.
There's no, exactly. Now, I feel bad for all the teenagers that try to have the horrible view of me trying to do like these dances on TikTok, but it's fun to do. I will always be that old lady that likes that stuff. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Colleen, and everybody. Thank you guys for listening. Join us next month. We'll definitely have another guest. Can't announce anybody yet, but hopefully, in about 2 weeks or so, we'll know. We'll let you guys know what's going on. All right, everybody. Bye.
Bye.